Conservative? You bet. Controversial? Right again. It's time to squabble on the Jim Benson Show.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Jim Benson Show. Conservative talk radio covering the issues that concern you here on the BBS Radio Network. If you're like me, and I believe something like 100 million other people in the USA, as well as many millions more around the world, you know we are in the midst of a communist revolution in this country. I'm by no means the only one saying this today, but yes, it's my firm belief. It's been a revolution with limited violence so far. I say this not meaning to make light of the horrific violence visited on us around the country in 2020 and since, with the leftist rioting from the communist Black Lives Matter and Antifa groups and others. As bad as that has been, it was confined to some urban areas around the country. But if the communists actually do eventually gain complete political control in this country, you can expect mass arrests, killings, and terror as the left moves to consolidate their absolute power over the population. This is what happens wherever communists gain complete political power. And we are being pushed in that direction today. And to be clear, I am not calling for any violence on the part of the political right here. This is what the left wants people on the political right to do so it can be used to turn the public against us. But if we should succeed in taking back the country, or at least making significant inroads toward that end with upcoming elections, you can bet there will be more rioting orchestrated by the left across the country in protest. And you can also bet that it'll be cheered on by the leftist Democrats and their media allies. And if you're like me, you're aware of the mountain of evidence that the 2020 election was rigged and stolen, as President Trump continually says. There's also evidence the previous and following elections were similarly tampered with. But the most critical of these rigged elections was the 2020 election that removed Donald Trump from office and installed the, much evidence suggests, CCP-compromised communist agent and appallingly corrupt Joe Biden in the White House. Biden can also be viewed as essentially a puppet of one of his biggest, if not the biggest, supporters, the radical and some say Marxist billionaire George Soros, who is very much involved through his network of, as I understand it, largely tax-exempt organizations, his open society foundations, in funding a lot of left-wing causes around the country. Former Trump lawyer Rudy Giuliani points out that Soros is also the biggest funder of the Black Lives Matter and Antifa communist organizations. Right on cue, once he was made president, Biden launched this Marxist revolution and immediately began undoing almost all that Donald Trump did to bring economic prosperity to the American people and boost our freedoms. Our prosperity, freedoms, and the power that comes with it are what the communists and their incredibly powerful allies among the Wall Street and other oligarch and globalist elites these days seem to hate and want to destroy. This so they can rule the world and subjugate us into being their serfs or slaves under some kind of communistic world government they control based on the CCP or Communist Chinese Party model, which these elites appear to admire so much, that is, the CCP, with all their money tied up in it and all their hopes for making much more money in communist China. What we are going through today are the direct results of our rigged and stolen elections. With these things in mind, wasn't it ironic to watch and listen to Joe Biden's hate-filled, hysterical rant against Donald Trump and MAGA Republicans in his September 1 speech in Philadelphia? MAGA Republicans are very bad and a threat to the very foundations of our republic, says Biden. He cast the upcoming midterm elections this fall as a battle for the soul of the nation, Biden made a distinction between the supposedly evil MAGA and, or Make America Great Again, Republicans, and the many rhinos, as I call them, and others, you know, Republicans in name only, who Biden lauds as being true patriotic Americans willing to work with the communist left and their oligarch and globalist allies to bring about the enslavement of our nation. That's how I see it anyway. The next day, Biden somewhat walked back his fiery comments condemning Trump's supporters, stating that people who call for violence or fail to condemn it refuse to acknowledge when an election has been won and insist on changing the way votes are counted. That's a threat to democracy. It's clear to me that Biden and his handlers in this country and among the CCP in China are afraid of Donald Trump running for president in 2024, as well as the possibility of pro-Trump Republicans gaining control of either or both U.S. House and Senate this fall in the midterms. No doubt they will be doing everything they can to keep the U.S. elections as rigged and steal as many votes as they can. That is the political left here. But thanks to grassroots efforts by many concerned and truly patriotic Americans, some progress has been made in making our elections more fair and secure, at least in some states. But I fear not nearly enough. We can expect lots and lots of vote and election fraud efforts again this fall. One thing you have to realize about the political left is what was expressed in the famous novel about totalitarianism, 1984, as well as elsewhere. And that is that the ends justify the means for communists and other socialists. And now they're supporters among our super rich elites on Wall Street and among the business community elsewhere and among the globalists, that is the world government lovers. And now it's the same for their, as I said, for these same people, but with their, our rich people, why would they do this, you might ask yourself? Well, because of their fabulous investments in the rigged and careful, speaking of rigged, and carefully controlled economy, government control, that is, in China. I've spoken previously about the so-called monopoly capitalists, as they're called, and their desire for the captive markets in totalitarian states such as communist China today and the Bolsheviks in Russia, even the Nazis. The lie and the trick, deceit and hypocrisy are part and parcel, the modus operandi of these people. This behavior includes regularly smearing and condemning their opponents by accusing them of the very behavior these leftists are engaging in. It's an old trick used down through the centuries by tyrants around the world. Hitler, Stalin, Mao, and many others have used it with devastating results. With these people, lies are truth. Hate is love. Down is up. They lie and then accuse you of lying. They claim to be fighting to save democracy and freedom and then accuse you of fighting to destroy these things. They work assiduously to destroy hated democratic processes and freedoms and say you're doing it. So it was not surprising to me to see Biden railing against people who challenged the legitimacy of his presidency and condemn them for supposedly advocating violence or refusing to condemn it. How ridiculous and hypocritical. Since it was the communist-allied Democrats who pushed vigorously with corrupt judges and other government officials they have installed to change the way votes are counted in the 2020 election so that they could rig and steal it. It's the Democrats and their bootlicks and propaganda mouthpieces in the mainstream media who have long refused to acknowledge the legitimacy of elections they lost. It's Democrats and their media mouthpieces who have called for violence against Donald Trump, his supporters, and our constitutionally established way of life and government here in the USA. Many of these same people have refused to condemn and even cheered on the BLM and Antifa rioters in 2020. And these mobs will be unleashed on the country again in an orgy of new violence should their Democrat and rhino leaders lose control of Congress in this fall's elections. I, at least, have no doubt. Let's listen to the audio of a video montage of Democrat election deniers played by one of President Trump's lawyers at Trump's second impeachment trial last year. In this audio, you'll hear the then Vice President Joe Biden presiding over the counting of the 2016 electoral votes in Congress. Play soundbite one, please.
You claim that it's wrong to object to the certification of election results. You, along with your allies in the media, attempted to cancel and censor members of this chamber who voiced concerns and objected to certification. Manager Raskin, you'd been in Congress only 3 days when you objected in 2017. It's one of the first things you did when you got here.
I have an objection because 10 of the 29 electoral votes cast by Florida were cast by electors not lawfully certified.
Is the objection in writing and signed not only by the member of the House of Representatives, but also by a senator?
It is in writing, Mr. President.
Is it signed by a senator?
Not as of yet, Mr. President.
In that case, the objection cannot be entertained.
Mr. President, I object to the certificate from the state of Georgia on the grounds that the electoral votes were not...
There's no debate.
And I object to the certificate from the state of North Carolina based on violations of the Voting
Rights
Act.
There is no debate. There's no debate in the joint session.
And I object because people are horrified by the overwhelming evidence.
Section 18, Title 3 of the United States Code prohibits debate.
I object.
I've objected to the counting of the electoral votes of the state of Ohio.
I object to the certificate from the state of Alabama. The electors were not lawfully certified.
I object to the 15 votes from the state of North Carolina because of the massive voter suppression and the closing of voting polling booths.
There's no debate. There's no debate.
16
There's
to 1.
No debate.
And the massive voter suppression that occurred.
The general will suspend.
I have an objection to the electoral votes.
The objection is in writing, and I don't care that it is not signed by a member of the Senate.
I do not wish to debate. I wish to ask, is there one United States senator who will join me in this letter?
There is no debate.
The objection is signed by a member of the House, but not yet by a member of the Senate.
Well, it is over.
And when the House managers realized that the president's actual words could not have incited the riot, as you alleged in your article of impeachment, you attempted to pivot. You said that raising the issue of election security and casting doubt on the propriety of our elections was dangerous. One of the House managers, Mr. Cicilline, told you that this is not about the words Mr. Trump used in isolation. Rather, it is about the big lie. The claim that the election was stolen. The House managers told you that it's the big lie that incited the riot, and that the big lie was President Trump's claim that the election was not a fair election or that the election was stolen. Claiming an election was stolen, you were told, are words that are insightful to a candidate's followers and cause people to respond violently. Claiming an election was stolen or not legitimate is something that a candidate should never do because he or she knows, or should know, that such a claim and such words can actually incite violent insurrection, you were told. Well, it seems that the House manager's position must be actually a bit narrower than that. The House manager's position really is that when Republican candidates for office claim an election is stolen or that the winner is illegitimate, it constitutes inciting an insurrection, and the candidate should know it. But Democratic Party candidates for public elective office are perfectly entitled to claim the election was stolen, or that the winner is illegitimate, or to make any other outrageous claim they can. It is their absolute right to do so. And it is their absolute right to do so, irrespective of whether there's any evidence to support the claim. Democratic candidates can claim that an election was stolen because of Russian collusion, or without any explanation at all. And that is perfectly okay. And is in no way incitement to an insurrection. And somehow, when Democratic candidates publicly decry an election as stolen or illegitimate, it's never a big lie. You've been doing it for years.
Now here's another audio montage of various Democrats claiming election fraud and stolen elections. In it, you'll hear the then-Senator Kamala Harris, Hillary Clinton, Stacey Abrams, the gubernatorial candidate from Georgia, radical leftist Ohio Senator Sherrod Brown, Jesse Jackson, and others. as well as current White House Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre explaining away a tweet she had posted claiming election theft. Play soundbite two, please.
What purpose is Member Wright?
I have an objection because 10 of the 29 electoral votes cast by Florida were cast by electors not lawfully certified because they violated Florida's prohibition against dual office holding.
Debate is out of order. Section 15 and 17 of the Title III of the United States Code require that any objection be presented in writing, signed by both members of the House of both a member of the House of Representatives and a senator. Is the objection in writing and signed not only by the member of the House of Representatives, but also by a senator?
It is in writing, Mr. President.
Is it signed by a senator?
Not as of yet, Mr. President.
In that case, the objection cannot be entertained.
Elections matter. When you win an election, you get to set the rules.
How can you win with Russian interference, though?
That's what I'm scared about, in
2020.
But rightly.
Because I think he's an illegitimate president that didn't really win. So how do you, you know, fight against that in 2020?
You are absolutely right. So, again, as a member of the Senate Intelligence Committee, I will tell you that we should believe exactly what the intelligence community has told us, which is Russia did interfere in the election of the President of the United States in 2016.
You can run the best campaign. You can even become the nominee. And you can have the election stolen from you.
Ms. Abrams, it's been over 2 years, and you still refuse to concede that you lost the race for governor in Georgia in 2018. You have said that, quote, you do not concede that the process was proper, and that, quote, they stole it from the voters of Georgia. Yes or no, today, do you still maintain that the 2018 Georgia election was stolen?
As I've always said, I acknowledge at the very beginning that Brian Kemp won under the rules that were in place.
So let's be clear. This is not a speech of concession.
In fact, someone outside asked if I'm ever going to concede. The answer is no.
And despite the final tally and the inauguration, we won.
You notably did not concede.
I did not.
Okay, you acknowledged that he won, but you did not concede.
Correct. And I did win my election. I just didn't get to have the job.
You ended up not getting the number of votes you needed to Republican Governor Brian Kemp. By just 54,000 votes, you refused to concede and say that you lost. Do you stand by that decision today?
Absolutely.
We have seen what, if Stacey Abrams doesn't win in Georgia, they stole it. It's clear. It's clear. And I would say, I say that publicly, it's clear. What they're trying to do in Florida to the gubernatorial candidate and to the Senate candidate running for re-election. What they tried to do in Ohio with some success by voter purging. What they did in Georgia when they shut down rural precincts that were predominantly African Americans where many people simply don't have transportation to get to the polls. That's what they do. They can't win elections because there's way more of us than there are them. They can't win elections fairly. They win elections by redistricting and reapportionment, in voter suppression, in all the ways they try to scare people, particularly people of color, how they make it hard for people on college campuses, especially community college where there are more low-income people and more people of color. We know those despicable laws are often aimed that way. And we must make sure, obviously, that every vote's counted in Georgia and Florida and everywhere else.
To have a head of our party who is sensitive to the plight of working people is the order of this day. Don't forget, when you lose, you tend to amplify woulda, coulda, shoulda. When you win, you cover up your sins. Don't let them fool you. We worked last year. We won the election. It was stolen.
Understand the new attention on the MAGA Republicans. You tweeted in 2016,
I knew this
Trump
was coming.
Stole an election.
I was waiting, Peter, when you were going to ask me that question.
Well, great. Here we go. You tweeted Trump stole an election. You tweeted Brian Kemp stole an election. If denying election results is extreme now, why was
so that? Let's be really clear. That comparison that you made is just ridiculous.
How is that ridiculous?
You're asking me a question.
Yes.
Let me answer it.
And you said it was ridiculous.
I was I was talking specifically at that time of what was happening with voting rights and the what was in danger of voting rights. That's what I was speaking to at the time. And here's the thing. I have said Governor Kemp won the election in Georgia. I've been clear about that. I have said President Trump won the election of 2016, and I've been clear about that. What we are talking about right now is, let's not forget what happened on January 6, 2021, when we saw an insurrection, a mob that was incited by the person who occupied this campus, this facility at that time. And it was an attack on our democracy. Let's not forget, people died that day. Law enforcement were attacked that day. That was the danger that we were seeing at the time. That's what the president has called out, and that's what he's going to continue to call out. So yes, when you have MAGA Republicans, a extreme part of Republicans who just deny or do not want to really say what exactly happened on that day, or say it was a protest when it clearly was not a peaceful protest. That's not what we saw on that day. Yes, the president's going to call that out. And here's the thing, majority of Americans agree with him. Majority of Americans agree with this president on protecting our democracy, protecting our freedom, and protecting our rights. That's what we're talking about today, and that's what the president's going to focus on.
Now here's conservative commentator Liz Wheeler on her Liz Wheeler Show on September 11th on YouTube, discussing Democrats calling for violence. Please play soundbite 3.
Second half of being a fascist after you have rejected the outcome of an election because it does not go your way, the second half is embracing political violence. Which political party in our country does this? Which political party embraces violence as a medium for pursuing and achieving their political agenda? This, via Justin Hart, is all of the high-ranking Democrats who have actually endorsed violence as a legitimate political tactic, as long as that violence is targeted at us.
I just don't even know why there aren't uprisings all over the country, and maybe there will be.
People need to start taking to the streets. This is a dictator.
You know, there needs to be unrest in the streets for as long as there's unrest in our lives.
Enemies of the state.
Show me where it says that protests are supposed to be polite and peaceful.
Do something about your dad's immigration practices, you feckless.
When they go low, we kick.
How do you resist the temptation to run up and wring her neck?
Biggest terror threat in this country is white men, most of them radicalized right up to the right.
I thought he should have punched him in the face. I said, even if you lost, he insulted your wife.
Yes.
He came down the escalator and called Mexicans rapists and murderers. He said, well, what do you think I should have done? I said, I think you should have punched him in the face and then gotten out of the race. You would have been a hero.
I'd like to punch him in the face. I said, if we were in high school, I'd take him behind the gym and beat the hell out of him.
Punch some people in the face.
When was the last time an actor assassinated a president?
They're still going to have to go out and put a bullet in Donald Trump, and that's a fact.
Look as his character is stabbed to death.
Where is John Wilkes Booth when you need him?
That's it right there, pulling up.
I have thought an awful lot about blowing up the White House.
A Missouri state senator is under investigation by the Secret Service after saying she hopes President Trump is assassinated.
I will go and take Trump out tonight.
And if you see anybody from that cabinet in a restaurant, in a department store, at a gasoline station, you get out and you create a crowd. And you push back on them. And you tell them they're not welcome anymore, anywhere.
And sadly, the domestic enemies to our voting system and our honoring our Constitution are right at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue.
They're not going to stop before Election Day in November, and they're not going to stop after Election Day. And that should be, everyone should take note of that on both levels, that this isn't, they're not going to let up, and they should not.
If you think we're rallying now, you ain't seen nothing yet.
That's the Democratic Party. And it's not just that Democrats irresponsibly and recklessly use their words to foment violence, to encourage other people to commit acts of violence against Republicans. It's that the left is actively doing this themselves in the streets Black Lives Matter, one of the biggest leftist Democrat-supported operations in modern American history, uses street tactics of violence to try to draw attention to their very obscure Marxist political agenda. You can watch this video on the screen right now. What is this? These are Black Lives Matter agitators that are stopping cars. They're essentially committing carjackings. Why? So that the media does what the media does. So that the media brings attention to the political agenda of the Black Lives Matter movement. What is the political agenda of the Black Lives Matter movement? It's just Marxism. Abolish the police. Abolish prisons. Abolish our criminal justice system. Abolish the nuclear family. Abolish capitalism. These are obscure, evil ideologies. Black Lives Matter would never get traction on their own, so they had to latch onto a false fear that politicians have instilled in Black people in our country, telling them that you're going to be shot for being Black by a systemically racist police force. The Black Lives Matter movement hijacked that false narrative in order to give rise to their political agenda. When that false narrative was debunked, what did Black Lives Matter do? They committed violence. Why? To push their political agenda. The left is actively trying to harm individual people on the right because they are conservative or Republicans. And the Black Lives Matter agitators that took over our streets in the past 3 years admit this to media outlets, admit the tactics that they use to try to harm both property and people. The left doesn't just use reckless words. They actively partake in violence. I mean, look at what they've done to cities across the United States. It's less safe in cities across the United States because of the violence of Antifa, of Black Lives Matter, of radical leftist organizations. You can see this on the screen. This looks like a war zone. This looks like a third world country. These are people breaking windows, dressed in black, pretending to be militants, burning cities, attacking cops. People trying to cross the street are having firebombs thrown at them. Police officers are seriously, critically wounded. Why? Because the left embraces political violence.
With 8 years each of the leftist presidencies of Bill Clinton and Barack Obama, and now with Joe Biden in the White House, the federal government has been thoroughly infiltrated with radical leftists and their brainwashed sympathizers, hell-bent to bring about a communist dictatorship in America. Some of them may not see it that way, but it's clear to me and many others that that's what they want. These people, like their wealthy oligarch and globalist allies eager to surrender America to their benefactor cronies in the CCP, actually believe that they will stay in power and keep or become wealthy under that American communist dictatorship. So it's again not surprising to me to see the corrupt Biden administration using the U.S. Justice Department and FBI, as well as other leftist-dominated state and local government entities, which have been weaponized and are doing everything they can to destroy Donald Trump and his most prominent allies and supporters. That's why we are seeing more than 40 Trump supporters, including even Trump's lawyers, getting subpoenas in sweeping fishing expeditions for any and all evidence the political left might be able to use to destroy Trump and his followers. Here's audio from Emerald Robinson's The Absolute Truth Show, September 13, featuring an interview with former New York City Police Commissioner Bernard Carrick, discussing him receiving a Justice Department subpoena. This is on the frankspeech.com website under TV shows. Play soundbite four, please.
We're learning more about the Department of Justice's ongoing harassment campaign. According to the Gateway pundit, Joe Biden's Department of Justice seized the phones of two top advisors for President Donald Trump. In total, the DOJ has targeted at least 40 Trump allies with subpoenas. People like Stephen Miller, Brian Jack, Dan Scavino have all received subpoenas related to January 6th and Trump's Save America PAC. Oddly enough, though, the New York Times, Washington Post, and CNN continue to get tipped off, you know, by anonymous sources regarding these subpoenas. The Times reporting that Boris Epstein and Mike Roman also had their phones seized by the DOJ. And yesterday, if you recall, we had former NYPD Commissioner Bernie Carrick on to join us to discuss how the Patriot Act led to this new surveillance state we now live in. We later learned after the show that Bernie Carrick had also received a subpoena from the DOJ, and he joins us now to discuss. Bernie, wow. I mean, I was a little shocked after you'd been with us yesterday that we learned the FBI agent showed up at your front door last week. You weren't home. So tell us what happened next and how you were eventually served.
I was out of town, got a call from the FBI. They said they were in my driveway, actually. I'd just spoken to my family. My daughter was a wreck. And I told him, I said, listen, I said, what are you looking for? He said he wanted to speak to me about my prior position with the legal team. I told him I'd be back up in, up north, and I talked to him when I got there. I was back the next morning, called him. They showed up at my house. Two agents came inside, one waited outside, two different vehicles. And, you know, he said he wanted to talk to me about my my time with the election campaign, with the election fraud investigation. And I told him, I said, listen, I have a great admiration for you guys, for what you do, the line agents of the FBI. I said, but I have no trust, faith, or confidence in your leadership. So I'm not going to be talking to you at all. If you want to talk to my attorney, you can do that. Have your prosecutors talk to my attorney. At which time he handed me a subpoena. The thing I thought was strange about this was that they know I have counsel. They know that, but they sent these agents anyway, which is pretty disturbing. You know, I've been doing this a long time. When I looked at the subpoena, there's over 120 people mentioned in that subpoena. I don't know 90% of them. I've never heard of many of the people in that subpoena, which was kind of odd. But the thing that stood out more than anything else is that every single one of Donald Trump's lawyers that was on the legal team investigating voter fraud and election fraud, they're named in that subpoena. That's insane. That's crazy. And for, go ahead.
I was just going to say, tell our audience why that would be unusual. Some people might not understand, you know, why so many people are talking about the fact that they're going after Donald Trump's lawyers.
Well, listen, Emerald, first of all, they're going after anybody related to Donald Trump, his family, yeah. His friends, his employees, his staff, his advisors, campaign people, anybody related to Trump they're going after. But for them to physically target his lawyers, when they know they have attorney-client privilege, they have executive privilege, this is to me, it's bizarre. You know, I've done this for 30 years, 35 years. I worked for the Department of Justice for five. I know the law. They seized Boris Epstein's. They seized Boris Epstein's cell phone. He's an advisor today, a legal advisor today, to the president. He's been for years. Like I don't get it. I don't. You know, I get that it's a fishing expedition. You know, I found it strange that the subpoena came from the Capitol Siege Unit of the FBI of the Department of Justice. I wasn't involved in the protest that turned into a mini riot and trespassing at the Capitol. They know that. I had nothing to do with that. I had nothing to do with the organizers. I had nothing to do with any of that. Why am I being subpoenaed? If you want to subpoena anybody, start sending subpoenas to the people that were involved in election fraud and voter fraud. There's tons of them. We have tons of affidavits. You want to investigate something, stop saying it's false claims. Stop saying the president's promoting or I'm promoting false claims. I'm not promoting false claims or anything. I have overwhelming evidence that there's probable cause to investigate voter fraud and election fraud in the 2020 election. Stop jerking around with everything else and go investigate it.
Well, that's exactly what they don't want people to do. They don't want people to talk about it. And it's very clear there's other actions going on despite the DOJ, outside of the DOJ, to try to keep people shut up.
Relevant to what we've been discussing today, let's hear some audio segments from former Trump lawyer and former New York City mayor and federal prosecutor Rudy Giuliani on his Rudy's Common Sense podcast, played on his website, rudygiulianics.com. That's R-U-D-Y-G-I-U-L-I-A-N-I-C-S, rudygiulianics, for common sense, .com. And this is on his September 16th episode. It's titled The New World Order with Biden and Soros. Please play soundbite 5.
Hello again. This is Rudy Giuliani back with another episode of Rudy's Common Sense. I mean, this has been a very good week or week and a half for truth and justice. First, we had the New York Times admit, line 28 or so, but still admit that the hard drive from hell that actually was fully authenticated 16 months ago and before the end of the 2020 election is absolutely true. Now, they picked out one little measly crime or two to focus on, some kind of tax evasion and some kind of failure to register, which is about, this would be like convicting John Gotti of not paying a traffic ticket. Well, they admitted that the hard drive is true. Well, I have the hard drive and had it for, I was the first one that got it and the first one to put it out. And I gave it to the New York Post. And so I would just summarize it very simply without going into great detail. The hard drive contains 30 years of crime, as described in detail by Hunter Biden, not by me, with very, very significant corroborating documents of money laundering, bribery, contracts like for $30 million a year from Chinese communists to Joe Biden. It traces in clear language the money that went to Joe Biden, 50% in general. That comes from Hunter, not me. But in any event, the hard drive lays out a level of criminality so far unheard of in America. I mean, there may have been presidents that were more corrupt and more crooked than Joe Biden, but history certainly doesn't reveal one that was a 30-year crook, 30 years of bribery amounting to, well, excess of $50 million. I'd say that's pretty safe. $31 million from China alone, our biggest enemy. So that the truth of that is out now. It's going to take a while for the liars of the establishment to accept it because, you know, among other things, they hid it from you before the election. I did everything I could to get it out to you. I gave it to the Post. I put it on my rudyscommonsense.com. I had put it on a lot of it on the rudyscommonsense.com almost a year earlier with pictures, documents, trials. I proved it every way possible, except I was accused of being a Russian agent, accused of being a liar, a scoundrel, kind of the way I am being accused now falsely about the election. And that's all going to turn out to be true also. Well, everything about what I said about the Bidens has now turned out to be true. So this was a good week. It got to be a really better week for the truth, not for the country, when Joe Biden made an extraordinary statement, which why don't we listen to him saying it? Because I think, I mean, only he can say it as inartfully and inarticulately as it can be said. So let's have him say it, and then let's find out what it is.
I believe in the world economy, not just the world economy, in the world. It occurs every three or four generations. As one of the top military people said to me in a secure meeting the other day, 60 million people died between 1900 and 1946. And since then, we established a liberal world order, and that hadn't happened in a long while. A lot of people dying, but nowhere near the chaos. And now is the time when things are shifting. There's gonna be a new world order out there, and we've got to lead it. We've got to unite the rest of the free world in doing it. So anyway.
So, I mean, we've got two parts to this, right? The first part is that somehow for the last 30 years, he believes we've been under the new liberal order. Well, I don't know. Somebody should tell Ronald Reagan that, huh? Somebody should tell Bill Clinton that when he said we're finished with welfare as we know it. And he spent the last 6 years of his presidency being a conservative because he got the heck kicked out of him after 2 years. And he basically just adopted the Republican program of the crime bill that Biden now runs away from, which I helped draft it. Got a letter from Bill Clinton thanking me. I'm not running away from it. But he is. And it's actually his only legislative achievement. He's running away from that. So according to him, we went through a whole new liberal period from the 70s to now. Well, that's, of course, total fantasy. I mean, we had the tremendous prosperity of the Reagan era. We had the short-lived prosperity of the Trump era. But now we're going to set the new world order. Yes, he said it. The new world order, the great reset. That's what his pal Trudeau says, the great reset. Do you know that this has been dismissed as a like a right-wing conspiracy? But I think listening to George Soros, who kind of connects all this together. This is the guy who biggest contributor to the Democrat Party in Biden, biggest contributor to Black Lives Matter, biggest contributor to Antifa, and for the longest time running this Open World Foundation, this One World Foundation, really, and being a proponent of one world and wanting to destroy Americanism, which may explain what he's done to us. I mean, this is the man probably most responsible for the crime wave in America, because the cities that set records for homicide last year, like Philadelphia, more homicides than ever in the history of Philadelphia, has a district attorney that puts violent criminals back out on the street on purpose. And so does St. Louis, and so does Chicago, and so does Manhattan now. And so does, I could go, Los Angeles, where they're trying to remove them. San Francisco, where they tried to remove them. All those cities, many of whom set records last year for homicide. And if they didn't, they had a lot of them. A lot of homicide, a lot of murder, a lot of destruction of African Americans. 70% or so in most of these cities are African Americans who are being slaughtered. And Soros put the district attorneys in who are putting the criminals back out on the street, who are doing the murders. And the Democratic Party and the Black members, officials of the Democratic Party, don't do anything. And if that doesn't get you mad, nothing will. It got me mad enough so that I ended that in New York and saved more Black lives than any mayor in history. And they're doing just the opposite. They're getting them killed. And biggest single group responsible for it are the Soros multi-million-dollar funded useless district attorneys who put criminals back out on the street, and their communities are outraged. And he started funding it in 2016 because he wants to destroy America so we become part of one world government, whatever the hell that is, run by Soros, I guess. I just want you to listen to this now. This goes back to 2010, and there's a reason I'm going to play 2010, because none of what he's talking about happens. I mean, he's not right.
What sort of a financial deal should Obama be seeking to strike when he travels to China next month?
No, I think this would be the time, because you really need to bring China into the creation of a new world order, financial world order. They are kind of reluctant members of the IMF. They play along, but they don't make much of a contribution because it's not their institution. Their share is not commensurate. Their voting rights are not commensurate to their weight. So I think you need a new world order, that China has to be part of the process of creating it, and they have to buy in, they have to own it, the same way as, let's say, the United States owns the Washington consensus, the current order. And
you believe that? Do you believe what he said in 2010? And now we fast forward to 2022, and we have a China that has armed itself to the point that it has a stronger navy than the United States. We've got a China that looks like it's on the verge of invading Taiwan and is supporting Russia in its savage, barbaric attack on Ukraine. We got a China that in the period of time that this whatever he is, talked about giving China a bigger role. I don't, how many millions of people have they killed? We've got a China that loosed COVID on the world. How many millions of people did they kill? How many Uyghurs have they killed? How many Christians have they killed? How many, who knows, their own people have they killed? China is a murderous dictatorship, homicidal communist dictatorship that wants to control the world by 2048 with the connivance of that man. Now, I don't know what's wrong with this guy. If you go into his background and you see what he was responsible for as a young man, it might be that the guilt of that has driven him crazy, because at one point back in the 90s, he said he had no guilt about it. And when they tell you you're anti-Semitic, if you attack them, anti-Semitic, wow, no way, babes. You want to start talking about people who have hurt the Jewish people? Just look into his background and you'll see what I'm go back to the 60 minute interview. And you'll see what I'm talking about. There's something seriously wrong with this man, and he is destroying this country. He's destroying it domestically with those DAs. We got a crime wave going on that he funded, and he's trying to destroy us internationally. He wants to make China stronger. That was 2010. Now, let's listen to a little bit more, and we'll see who's contributing to this, who's behind this new world order, this one world, so Soros can be more important, so we can be wealthier, so we can have more control. I don't know.
Does it at some point need also to decline against the renminbi? Does there need to be some sort of a new global currency deal?
Yes. No, I believe that basically the system is broke and needs to be reconstituted. We cannot afford to have the kind of chronic and mounting imbalances in international finance. So you need a new currency system.
So basically what Soros here is doing is attacking the United States dollar. And he wants it removed as the world currency so that a one world currency can be established. What American attacks the American dollar? I mean, he's about as loyal to America as he was to his childhood friends. I guess if you're disloyal early in your life, you remain that way, just like Biden. If you're a crook and a cheat in law school or a cheat in law school, you end up being a crook all your life or a cheat all your life. But I mean, I don't know if you've ever been exposed to this guy, but this is about the most dangerous guy in America. So let's get a little more of an understanding of how this agenda that we've talked about, the New World agenda that Biden slipped and mentioned today and took it from a right-wing conspiracy to a reality, except he hasn't told us what it is, but his big fundraiser and donor is doing a pretty good job here of telling us way back in 2010 what it is.
You could actually internationally create a currency through special drawing rights. And this is, we've done it. We issued $250 billion. And that's a very, very useful step. Except the rich countries don't actually need the additional reserves. So all they can do is put it in the shop window and say, we've got that much extra, but they can't actually use it. Now, I think it could be used. It could be used to provide global public goods. The rich countries could put their allocations in escrow. The problem is that there is a cost to using SDRs.
Well, I mean, there you see what they're talking about in this agenda, and really, which is at the core of climate change, which is a redistribution of wealth from the rich countries to the poor countries. Just move the money. I mean, he could just give all his money to the poor countries if he wanted to. I don't see him doing that. Got like too nice a tie. He looks a little too fat and a little too happy to have given all his money away. And as far as I know, he and his son still fly around in private planes. So I don't know, George, if you feel that, give all your money to the poor countries and be poor. Or maybe you should pay some reparations for what you did as a young man.
Like I said earlier, there's been some significant progress in making our elections more secure, but we still have the vulnerable, according to our own federal government and others, electronic voting equipment being used around the country. And if you're familiar with Mike Lindell, who established the website frankspeech.com, you can see all of his arguments there for this. He's contending, he and his team, that over 90% of, well, what he said is that on Election Day 2020, every single county's election machines in the country were hacked and votes were manipulated, or at least attempted it that way. In many cases, they succeeded. And these hacking attacks, 90% of them came from communist China, which is very familiar with our voting machines. And there's a lot of evidence that they have way, way, way too much knowledge and control, or have access to them, or could have access to them. Anyway, there are also plenty of corrupt Democrat strongholds still around in these swing states and elsewhere, where no doubt in my mind, these people will be doing all they can to throw the elections for their communist oligarch and globalist masters to keep the communist revolution going and strengthen it. You see, my friends, it all comes down to our elections. Many good patriotic Americans are fighting around the country for more secure and honest elections. The big question for me is, will it be enough? If you've never been involved in politics before, particularly your local politics and elections, now's the time to get involved. There's never been a more critical time or a more critical need in our lifetimes for good people to get involved in the election of Americans who want to keep our Constitutional Republic, our precious liberties, and way of life. That's it for another show. As always, we hope you found the content of interest and value. You can listen to a podcast of today's show when it's posted in the next few days on the Jim Benson Show page at bbsradio.com. Look for us again 2 weeks from now in this same time slot. Have a great rest of your day and evening.